Kildare Today with Clem Ryan. Oh, Kira and Owen says a WhatsApper. Don't mention Antrim hurlers to poor Clem. I got away with it. I thought I was waiting for the two of them to start going on about Antrim hurlers beating my beloved Banner yesterday. And I got away with it, didn't I, Oney?
Well, you got away with it on air. It was the first thing I said to you when you came in this morning, was what happened to Clare hurlers.
Yeah.
So thanks to that listener for addressing it on air. I was going to let you away with it, but we might as well mention it. What happened?
It was uncalled for me to be walking into work early on a Monday morning to be greeted with that, you know, the poor Clare hurlers. How low can you go?
Yeah.
That was very disrespectful to Antrim, Owen. I'm going reporting you to the Antrim County Board.
No, brilliant performance by Antrim. What does it say about Clare?
It's a lovely county, actually. Yeah, you're going there for all this, are you?
Yeah, well.
All right, okay. I thought I'd gotten away with it. Well, I did, until a listener very kindly decided to remind me. Some people are selling their Penny's appointment online for €100, says Jimmy Nace. I don't believe it. Selling an appointment to go shopping. My God, indeed. And we have lots of other messages come. Let's have a look at those, by the way. We'll be looking at the Ardrey Meadows halting site situation later on. Can anyone ask the council why, with all of these issues, why they are currently planning to build a further four houses as a concerned resident? Well, we have a statement from Kildare County Council, and we'll hear from some of the residents later on. How about the Scots trying to jump ship again? Well, they're talking about a referendum for independence. Should we be talking here about a referendum to unite the country? I think before we start uniting things geographically, we might begin by trying to reunite people's minds in the first place. Then we might have some hope. Yeah, don't mention more on don't mention the Clare hurlers or the Antrim hurlers to Clem. Council houses, absolutely, says Clem. Be careful, by the way. And lots of messages coming in of the PC brigade, says another in regards to that. I would always use the term, I suppose we call it social housing now. It was first called that, says a listener, over 100 years ago. The council weren't the only people in regards to that. I'll get some more of your messages in a couple of minutes, so keep them coming, please. 083-9797, and I promise to get through them all. Now, my opening guest this morning says the public is right to be enraged and worried about global investment funds buying up entire estates and apartment blocks. These homes are going to be rented out at inflated rents and will lock out those seeking to buy a home. In this journal article, Dr. Rory Hearn says the government has been called on to do something to stop this. Even Fianna Fáil politicians have come out crying crocodile tears of outrage. But the truth is, the investor purchase of housing in Ireland on a major scale is actually government policy and has been for the last decade. Dr. Rory Hearn, good morning to you.
Good morning and thanks for having me on.
Not at all. I've been reading your various articles across the papers and indeed listening to you on radio and television, including prime time in the last couple of days as well. You say this is actual government policy. Explain that point.
Well, it is, yes, straight up. Government has been promoting real estate investment funds to come into Ireland and to set up in Ireland and buy up housing, apartments, after the crash back in 2008-2009, once they set up NAMA. It was originally the Fianna Fáil-led government set up NAMA, and they sold off, you probably remember back then, Anglo-Irish Bank and became the IBRC. And basically they took all the, what we call the toxic loans off the banks, all the property that had collapsed and developers, and they turned to these global investors to try and sell them off, to try and take those bad loans off the banks so they said they could get the banks working again. And that continued. Then obviously we had the Fine Gael government took over in 2011 and have been the lead party in government since 2011. And really it was at that point that it really started taking off. 2013, they introduced a tax break, the Real Estate Investment Trust tax break for these investment funds. 2012, sorry, which was called the 2013 tax break. Michael Noonan was very supportive of these funds, and they really saw them playing two roles. One was doing this job of buying up all these loans and property off the banks, which they felt would free up the banks again to get lending and take all those bad right away, basically the crash. And the other thing then, and kind of as the economy started picking up at that period, 2014, 15, 16, they saw them as playing a key role in increasing a supply of rental housing. Mm-hmm. And so essentially, yeah, it's been policy since then to back them.
And you say in your article, the policies over the last decade have doubled the price of a home in Dublin City, meaning you pay an additional $178,000 over what you would have paid in 2013. And in Kildare, you say you have to pay an additional $114,960 for a home over what one would have paid in 2013. Astonishing rises. It does seem like we could be back in the worst of the Celtic Tiger. And on rents, you wrote, the average national monthly rent was €825 in 2013, with the average rent in Dublin being €1,148. Now the monthly rent in Dublin is €1,948, and obviously near that in County Kildare as well. Regarding the policy also, economist Colin McCarthy wrote in The Independent yesterday. He said in housing there's a plethora of measures which could be followed. But he said the housing crisis is not only about mortgages and rents. It's about pensions, inheritance, the urban-rural divide, intergenerational equity and the distribution of the chances within generations. He says there is no policy on housing, is his view. These issues are not addressed in the Housing Affordability Bill agreed by the Cabinet last week, nor in the responses of Sinn Féin and the other opposition party. The bill does not say what it says on the tin. Plot a course that would make housing affordable in the foreseeable future. There are no counter-proposals that look any better. Would you agree with that sentiment?
Well, I think that what I have highlighted, I think there are solutions. I think there are alternatives. I think they require something that is quite radical in terms of the change in policy. And I think that if we look at it, you know, I made this point that in the article that this policy didn't... The investor funds is like the extreme end of a policy that treats homes as investment assets that goes back to the 1990s, where, you know, people started buying second homes, were encouraged to buy second homes, as in buy-to-let investments. You know, anybody was encouraged to become a landlord, basically, if you had any sort of money, the banks were lent to you. We became, you know, property prices started inflating, and this whole idea of seeing a house as an investment asset, a potential, you know, paying towards your pension in the future, became kind of much more embedded. And prior to that, that wasn't the case. People did not generally view their house as an asset. They saw their house as a home.
Yet Taoiseach was on this programme 2 days ago and he was defending the idea, and I've heard that defended by other people in the media as well across the last couple of days, that we need the institutional investors. I saw an article, I think it was in the Sunday Times yesterday, which said the problem is that banks won't loan to developers to build the kind of housing estates and blocks that we need, because they were burned once back in the Celtic Tiger. They don't want to be burned again. And the kind of certainty that's available to developers to build estates comes from these institutional funds from abroad.
Well, you see, that's not true, because it's the Taoiseach, I think, has been very misleading in how he and others, government ministers, have come out on this by saying we're relying on these investors for supply. We don't have to rely on these investors for a supply of funding. There's a completely different thing. It's a completely different thing between accessing finance on, you know, from globally, from global markets, from investment lenders, and buying up investment funds, buying up units and building to rent. That's a complete... They're two different things, and they're conflating it, I believe, on purpose, because they're trying to get attention away from what they have done. Because what you can do is that if, for example, we look at supply, the finance is there, firstly, from the European Investment Bank. It is there from... The government can borrow itself to build. And the Ocoolan Cooperative, which you're probably familiar with, they're building affordable housing. They've built it in North Dublin. They're expanding more. And they explain very clearly that you can go off and get finance from on the private markets. And you can build at very, very reasonable prices that are affordable housing. But the problem is what we have built in Ireland is we've built in this investment fund model, this speculative development model that requires huge land prices, huge profits for finance, huge profits for developers. And that's why these big funds come in then, and they want to charge the high rents, they want to charge high house prices. And what I'm arguing for is that we need a fundamental change. We need a radical change away from this housing policy. And we need the state to build affordable housing. We need them to support the financing of developers to build affordable housing, actually affordable housing. And we should stop our reliance on these funds.
All right. Now, I put it to the Tánaiste, you know, what about addressing the tax issues where these cuckoo funds don't pay on rental income, they don't pay capital gains on disposal of estates and whatever. He said that some tax changes had come in, and you also advocate tax changes in terms of your proposed solutions, and you also advocate an allocation as high as 70% of new developments to be sold to home buyers. I put it to the Tánaiste, would they consider 30%? He wasn't outright on that, but he said it might be an idea.
Yeah, I think the government are really just, to me, they're scrambling around trying to make it look like they're going to do something on this without any substantive action. And I think, like, it's very clear, and also a really important point to make is that they're talking about housing estates, and obviously we've got, you know, housing estates being built in the commuter belt in Kildare and Wicklow, Meath to a certain extent, and in Dublin itself. But much more of what we're seeing increasingly being built is apartments. And apartments are homes for people too. They're where, you know, smaller families buy a home. People might buy a first home. They buy, you know, singles. They can, you know, people downsizing, and also people who want to rent. And so for me, the question is, well, why should investor funds be allowed to buy up entire apartment blocks and charge massive rent and lock people out of the opportunity to buying or living in an affordable apartment either? And so for me, that's why I've allocated that across the board, there should be a limit, I believe, to 70%. It should be limited to, so as in, they could only buy 30%, because we have to stop this. Like, this is terrifying in terms of what potentially is coming down the line with these funds and what they could buy up if they're not stopped.
And one thing that you would agree, finally, Dr. Rory Hearn, is, and your assistant professor in social policy in Maynooth University, you say in your journal article, tomorrow the government could direct NAMA to deliver 70,000 completely affordable units on its land. Now, to put that number in context, the government expects to build about, that there will be about 15,000 units built this year, when we need at least 35,000 every year for at least the next 5 years. You go for 70,000. You say NAMA has 7,000 units construction ready, 8,600 in planning, and 10,000 in pre-planning, which you say in your article, that's an entire year of supply of the country's housing needs. It still owns 747 hectares of residential development land, enough for 75,000 dwellings. And in his Sunday Independent article yesterday, economist Colin McCarthy says, this crisis has nothing to do with scarcity of sites closer to the city and suitable residential developments. There's a scarcity only of political will to contemplate lower prices. The political class seems incapable of facing the music on planning and housing supply. And you echoing that point in regards to the amount of publicly owned land that is available if only it were released.
Yeah, and I make this point in the article, I've been making this point for years, that the government itself has a key role in the delivery, and that means building, of social homes, council housing, and affordable homes to buy and to rent. And it has not done that. And we've had the ability to do that. You could argue, you know, during the austerity years, either way I would disagree with it, but anyway, over the last 5 years, there is no argument that they could have been building and investing significantly more in building, and through NAMA as well, social and affordable rental and to buy, and they haven't done it. The current plans, in terms of the Minister Dara O'Brien's plans on building 4,000, you know, affordable homes over the next 4 years, we need 4,000 affordable homes in 1 year, not per year. I think their scale of ambition absolutely reflects what Colin McCarthy said, and what I've been saying is that they lack the political ambition, they lack the interest, and I think they're reluctant to increase the supply in affordable housing, because that would moderate, if not decrease, house prices and rents. And they've built their political model and their housing model around rising house prices and rising rents. And I think that, you know, we've seen an investor fund very explicitly say this publicly, that the biggest danger to their profits is an increase in affordable housing supply. And to me, that says it all as to who they've been listening to in recent years, and that has to change.
And finally, in another Sunday Independent article yesterday, the SRI's Kieran McQuinn is quoted as saying all the other policy measures are kind of skirting around the edges of the problem to a certain extent. The underlying issue is you need to substantially increase the amount of state funding for housing projects. Meanwhile, by the way, to show where we are in terms of prices, which Dr. Rory Hearn profiled in his journal article with the difference in prices between 2013 and now, we being back to the Celtic Tiger. Well, we can rely on The Economist, which predicted that by 2023, that remembers only 2 years' time, Ireland will outperform 16 markets in Europe and beyond, including the United Kingdom, the US, France, Germany and Australia. The Celtic Tiger looks poised to reawaken despite scarring from the past. Further profile on that, assistant professor in social policy at the Department of Applied Social Studies in Maynooth University, on his views on what we need to do to solve this crisis, Dr. Rory Hearn. Thank you for your time, Rory, and good morning to you.
Thank you, and good morning to your listeners as well.
All right, there you have it, folks. Over the last 4 or 5 days, from the Taoiseach to Fiona Brennan in Sinn Féin to Dr. Rory Hearn and more, we've been trying to enhance your understanding of what's going on in the market. The one thing is for sure, we have a crisis generally in housing, and it's been exacerbated by the activities of these institutional investors in the market. Now, we're waiting to see. The Taoiseach has said on this programme the other day that within weeks, the government will bring in changes to address the issue, possibly to prevent these funds from buying up estates, maybe to set limits on the amount of houses they can buy in any one estate, maybe to confine them to apartment blocks. Who knows? Further changes in the tax situation. His words were, within weeks I would expect to see these changes. We're watching, Taoiseach.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
After much research and contacting the CIA at Quantico in Virginia and the FBI and others, I found the identity of that person who was taunting me about the Clare Hurlers. JJ Power, step up to the plate there. Clem and Owen, don't mention the Hurlers. And they got to that. How you doing, JJ? Good for you. Mick and Meath says, these people in local authorities and government annoy me because it's all false promises. They know there'll be an election coming up and they're desperate to hang on to their well-paid jobs. Social housing has been in the state since the first call, the Ivy Trust, over 100 years ago. The council weren't the only people offering houses to help social issues. Social housing, says a listener, Tom Redmond in Athy. How are you, Tom? Sinn Féin representative in Athy. The count's social housing is a colloquial term used to explain the criteria needed to get a house to live in. It's provided to people who are assessed to be unable to afford housing from your own resources, says Tom. I suppose with housing associations and that nowadays, it's not just council housing anymore. I see the point you're making. Housing associations will be dealing with an estate built by a housing association in Athy shortly or in the next hour. But I like the term council house. The salt of the earth. We all grew up in council houses. Great neighbourhoods. When we went out and we played hurling on the roads, God be with the days, and skipping and picky. And all those games, and we'd be tops around the place and hoops. All those games you never see children play nowadays. And where everybody had very little, but everybody shared it. What happened to that spirit, I wonder, you know, in time? Where we live now in places where we don't even know our neighbours, and we keep our doors closed all the time because we have to, because the contents might walk away out the door. It will cost money to inspect houses, cost for wages for people to inspect them, says another, in terms of Social Justice Ireland suggesting housing inspections. Morning, Clem. You're right. That term used for travellers is a term that's also used for people who deal in dead animals. The people you're also social housing name you're on about, we're becoming very goody-goody, says Sean in Athy in regards to more on the name. And finally, for the moment, the problem with housing is too many politicians are landlords and have a vested interest. No politician should be allowed to be a landlord or their family members. It's a conflict of interest. Well, your family members, I don't think you'd go that far. And in regards to politicians, by the way, all commercial interests held by politicians have to be declared in a register of interests. So there is transparency in that. Now, let's move on to the recent meeting on Friday afternoon of the Clanmunnet Municipal District and Social Democrats Councillor Aidan Farrelly. Good morning, Aidan.
Morning, Clem. How are you?
Thank you. Quick word on Maynooth, Aidan, because I know you were raising questions on this in Mullen Park.
Yeah, Clem, to be honest, I was one of the first out on this a number of weeks ago. In the communications that we had received from the council, it really raised a red flag for me because it just appeared to be all wrong. And like your previous guest, Dr. Rory Hearn, I had the privilege of joining Rory on his podcast during the week, Reboot Republic, to discuss what had happened in Maynooth and how it went so wrong. And the council had been in negotiations along with the approved housing body for upwards of 140 of the units in Mullen Park. And back in October, the council confirmed that phase one of that had gone to the private market. And then about 3 weeks ago, when we received a second communication from the council, that the developer has now gone fully to one, as we know now, to be the REIT.
Yeah.
I had to raise it on the council's agenda because there's just something simply wrong where the private greed is taking priority over the public need, really.
Okay, and the taxpayer ultimately pays double in the sense that the council, in renting them back at the very, very high prices set by these vulture funds, is using money raised from the taxpayers. So we lose all round in the ability to buy houses and ultimately paying those exorbitant rental costs as well. All right, Aidan, well done on that, on your motions to the council. You want the council to tell you of its decision not to install speed ramps at locations such as Kilchan Row and other locations throughout the Clanmunnet Municipal District.
Yeah, Clem, to be honest, this issue really continues to grow and it's causing frustration around the county and certainly around our electoral area, where we as councillors would receive many emails and communications from people requesting consideration be given to a certain section of roads that they believe is dangerous for themselves as pedestrians or as local residents. And we will then take on as councillors to communicate and highlight that issue to the council. And quite often the council says, doesn't meet the guidelines, so no. And quite often then we have to go back as the middle person in this relationship and say, well, on behalf of the council, they're saying no because of the guidelines. But we haven't, as councillors, seen those guidelines.
All
so
right.
We've been promised them, and we've been told they're technical, so we probably won't understand them. But we've been committed now that in the next month or so we'll see these, and then ultimately that helps us to communicate better with those locally who are seeing the need.
Two motions that you had on issues to do with primary and secondary schools, and we've been looking at this for months here, and the other on childcare facilities, which we've highlighted on numerous occasions as well. First, you want the council, regarding the county development plan, in advance of that the council writes to the Department of Education seeking a report on both primary and secondary schools' current and proposed capacity in the municipal district. I presume the answer there simply was, we'll write to them.
Yeah, absolutely, and the council have committed to write to them as soon as possible. Clem, and we see in Clane, for example, where the strategic housing development policy now sees upwards of 1,000 units granted planning permission in Clane.
Yeah.
And the 2016 census tells us there's 2,700 households in Clane. So that's a huge increase. But in all of those applications, the applicant has said there is capacity in those schools to take the additional pupils, whereas when we speak to principals and we see principals writing in local media, they're saying no, we're at capacity. So I set up a meeting on Friday. I'm only disappointed I didn't do this a year ago, because now we have on board Planola granting all of these permissions for additional residences, which is great, but also what we need is the infrastructure to go along with that to build communities alongside
Indeed.
These houses.
And we have frequently on this programme featured parents who can't get their kids into schools because there isn't enough places, and there isn't a shadow of a doubt. But right around the county, there are capacity issues. And finally and briefly, if you would, Aidan, please, you also asked for the number of planning applications granted in the Clanmunnet area in the last 2 years, which included the provision of childcare facilities, but those which haven't commenced to date. Again, another issue that we have found right across the various municipal districts, that in many cases, planning applications have been granted on the basis of a creche being provided, but not in all cases has this happened.
No, and what we find sometimes, especially again with the strategic housing development, is the plans will go in for the childcare facility, and then once they're granted permission, the developer again applies to remove that because it's not big enough to be a financially viable business. So they end up removing the planning permission and putting in a couple of townhouses or small residential units instead, and ultimately that's not serving the community. So we put it in just to have it on record to see what the response was back. And while it isn't as big an issue in Clane, it has been rife throughout this county where we're not seeing. I met a great group in Maynooth last week who are looking for a community creche to be developed because the communities are starved of these basic facilities, Clem. We're concerned about housing, and it's very vital that we are, but it's everything else that goes along with it that needs to be cognizant of as well.
Indeed, a year ago, I told on this programme, when we spoke to people in Maynooth, saying that there were no childcare places available until 2024. That was a year ago. That is the scale of the crisis in childcare availability and facilities around. Social Democrats Councillor Aidan Farrelly, thank you for your time. Hi, Aidan.
Thanks, Clem.
Good morning to you. Now, the first of two topics we're covering this morning, where listeners are raising concerns, in this case about a school, in the next, our listeners raising concerns regarding a halting site adjacent to a housing estate. First of all, Elaine, good morning.
Morning, Clem. How are you?
I'm not too bad. You're not too great anyway, because I know that you're quite concerned, you say, in regards to the costs that for pupils attending Cross and Passion School in Kilcullen. We have asked the school, by the way, for a statement last Friday, I think it was on, and we haven't received a reply to that just yet.
No, we haven't. We sent it off Friday out. Just after I was speaking to Elaine, we sent a request off for a statement, and as of now, we haven't had a response from the school.
All right, Elaine, outline your frustration for us.
Well, it all started with a webinar we had for TY, and the expenses that would be there regarding the fees, a new tracksuit which will only be €80, and books, no book rental scheme, and sure, that would be nothing compared to what you're paying in fifth year. So that got me to thinking, not just expenses for this year, but forward thinking into fifth year. And can I just say, Ken, this is not about me personally, this is about the community as a whole. We're in a pandemic, people are out of work, finances are stretched, and the school don't seem to be considering that because there are guidelines set down by the government and they don't seem to be implemented by the school.
Now, the guidelines you're talking about are reducing cost to parents, school uniforms, Department of Education and Skills, which they have outlined on that particular. Owen, you might send me that link, please, and we'll have a further look at it. Now, in the case of this, you mentioned TY. For listeners who mightn't be familiar, that's transition year. It's like a year now between junior cert and going into the 2 years of the leaving certificate cycle. So you're saying, the cost there, among other things, €80 for a tracksuit. And you also make a point, you say that the sourcing the uniform, it is only available from a company in Baltinglass.
Yes, and one of the guidelines is set out is where an exclusive supply, it should be tendered out on a regular basis. And I've spoken to uniform shops in Newbridge, and they get a straight no from the school, unfortunately. So now I did get a response back to say that other things have, like the kids are involved in the making up of their tracksuit. So it just seems to be that the top, when we spoke at the webinar, it was top and bottoms that had to have a badge on it. But now it seems that it's just the tops, and the bottoms can be plain black and you can buy a badge. So that's something a little positive out of that.
Right, I'm just looking at some of the details, Elaine, on the government. Measures adopted by schools to reduce the cost of uniform and other costs. It's the government, the department's website, it says. Yes. School authorities should adopt the following principles of cost-effective practice, which will put a greater emphasis on reducing the cost of school uniforms and other costs. A, all elements of a school uniform should be purchased from various stores. B, only iron-on or sew-on crests should be used rather than the embroidered ones. Mm-hmm. Wherever possible, generic rather than branded items should be specified. Uniform, clothing, IT tablets, sports equipment. D, provide parents with a list of all required items and indicate the likely costs of these required items at best value stores. E, provide a book rental scheme. F, phase out between now and September 2018, remember? That's 3 years ago. The use of workbooks which cannot be reused. And G, where an exclusive supply of arrangement applies, it should be tendered for regularly. It goes on to other headings. There should be consultation with parents, rewarding schools for adopting the principles we've talked about above, and then a timeline which said that they were the position schools should implement the circular from September 2017 onwards. That's 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So your view is that all schools certainly don't seem to be adopting this?
No, I mean, the primary school next door in Fairness Anne brought it in immediately. And the principal has taken over now only the last couple of years. So you would have hoped maybe new broom, that new measures would have been in place.
All right, OK, so we're talking about here, you're saying the costs for transition year, do you think they're excessive?
They're there for a reason, and I understand that.
How much is the overall cost, by the way?
€400.
€400. I thought we have free education in this country, by the way.
Yeah, and that does not include books. It does not include the uniform. It does not include, and that's what I'm saying. That's why
€400 for what then? If it doesn't include books or the uniform or tracksuits,
we're just told that all money is put towards the TY activities.
Okay, now I know from my own experience that transition year, it does involve schools bringing in external speakers or helpers or whatever else. Mm. It involves trips. Does that involve the cost of a trip away, maybe?
No.
So €400 and not including all the ancillary costs, how much do you reckon then it might cost you to send your child to transition here if you take the €400 and then in addition uniform? How much is the uniform?
Roughly, they're saying 80. So right. You need two tracksuits.
That's many
teenage boy.
Yeah.
But as I said, Clem, this started with TY, and it made me think about the whole structure. So bring it back even to first year. So you've got families now going into first year who are going to have a book list for €500, where other schools in the county couldn't have a book rental scheme, and the difference is €200, and that could pay the €180 school fees.
Is there a book rental scheme at Cross and Passion, to your knowledge?
No, there's not.
Right. Any point, by the way, raised by Elaine here, there's an open invitation to Cross and Passion to reply to our statement, or indeed to reply to any of the points made by Elaine. We're just taking our view, and there is full right of reply available to the school in relation to this. And of course, Elaine, you're raising something here that every parent in every town and village around the county is saying, yeah. School costs.
Yeah.
But ultimately, of course, you know where the problem lies. Government level, which is not resourcing schools sufficiently.
But to the best of my knowledge, they can implement a book rental scheme.
You're right, they can.
They're incentivised by the government to do this. There are rewards. I don't know what they are, but I'm sure there are rewards. But if so, some schools can do it, why not our local school? To me, it just seems, are they not bothered? Is it because the saving that can be passed on to the parents can then be still put back into the school through the school fees?
Right, and the website of the Department of Education in regards to this says the Minister for Education and Skills has decided to publish measures to be adopted by schools to reduce the cost of school uniforms and other costs. The Minister considers there's a need to put a greater emphasis on reducing cost of school uniforms and other costs, and it's set out in the Action Plan for Education over the next couple of years. And among those issues is that all schools should provide a book rental scheme.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, you've made your point, and certainly the costs generally to parents sending children to schools, I mean, try sending someone into first year now, and costs that go with that.
Can I just say, Clem, sorry, the school have invite parents who might be struggling financially to come and talk to them. And that's very generous of them, and the door, they've an open door policy, which is fantastic. However, the book rental scheme and anything that else is there, it makes it an even playing field for all families. And I just want families to be aware that these guidelines are there, and that pressure maybe should be put on the school to implement them. They're there for a reason, and they're there for the community as a whole. This is not just about me. And I just want to make that clear. I'm not going, oh, poor me, look,
yeah.
I have this big slap in
that. No, fair enough. I mean, you're making points that are valid, that everybody is pressed financially. And some people
this
are...
that we've had.
are disastrously pressed financially. Yeah. Jobs have been lost, income has been lost, people surviving on PUP and whatever else. And the only question I would raise is, why do all students have to go in a particular quality